So my book is my story and the stories of other people that I meet along the way, and I make sure to mention their story and their name. At some point, the book will make you cry, will make you laugh, will make you joyful, will make you tearful. So I just hope people will do something with all of these emotions, because emotions alone are not enough. Emotions are only powerful when you convert them into actions.
Your book includes the dedication to Gaza: "The soul of our souls, all I am and all I will ever become is for you and because of you." Do you hope to return, Plastia, to Gaza?
Of course, I always hope. Of course, I always hope to return to Gaza. And I find that a very weird question when people ask it to me, because it's not like it's even an option right now. The borders are closed. I can't just go back right now even if I want to. People can't leave even if they want to. And I can't go to any Western country easily. I need a lot of paperwork and visa processes to be able to go. But these people who have powerful passports can go to my homeland. Meanwhile, I'm just stuck in here. I can't go back home, and I can't travel to any country that I want. So I just find it a bit weird
how
almost in every interview people ask me, do you want to go back?
Thank you so much for being with us, but the show is ending. Plastia Alakad, The Eyes of Gaza, is her new book.
KBOO Pointland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service helping those who are stressed, worried, or just feeling down when they call or text 988. Support is confidential, and call takers are real people in Oregon who speak with understanding and respect. More info at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a court date is set for appealing a ruling on sending National Guard troops to Portland. The Supreme Court considers banning bans on conversion therapy. And in international news, Ukraine experiences one of the biggest attacks of the war. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 7th, 2025. I'm Eric Leuschner. A panel of appeals court judges might decide Thursday whether or not to uphold an order banning National Guard troops in Portland. The panel could also act sooner. Today, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals set oral arguments in the case for 9 a.m. on Thursday. The court also noted it may choose to issue a decision based on briefs submitted by attorneys for the Trump administration and lawyers for the state of Oregon and city of Portland. The legal battle concerns whether Donald Trump has the authority to send National Guard members to Portland. On Saturday, U.S. District Judge Karen Immergut, a Trump appointee, issued a ruling which temporarily blocked the administration from sending 200 Oregon National Guard members to Portland. Immergut found that protests near the ICE facility in South Waterfront have largely played out peacefully and have not met the threshold for Trump to send in the National Guard. Trump, on the other hand, continually describes Portland as being a war zone and repeatedly says the city is on fire. Immergut ruled the small protests taking place could be addressed by federal officers and Portland police. The federal government argued the demonstrations, while small, have involved property damage and mistreatment of federal officers. The administration claims that rebellion meets a legal requirement for sending in the Guard. In its appeal, the Trump administration asked the circuit judges to immediately halt the restraining order until a hearing could be held. The court did not say it would do so. Immergut expanded the original ruling after Trump signaled he would send National Guard members from California and Texas to Portland. That second ruling bars the deployment of any National Guard members to this city. The Supreme Court today heard a case involving a Christian therapist who says her free speech rights are violated by a Colorado law barring mental health professionals from trying to change a teenager's sexual orientation or gender identity. The justices debated whether that treatment or advice, known as conversion therapy, causes harm to minors. Lawyers for the therapist and the Trump administration said there have been no studies indicating such damage. The state countered that there is a mountain of evidence that conversion therapy is both ineffective and actually harmful. Medical organizations have been speaking out against the practice since at least the 1990s. The court decision, expected by June, will have implications for the more than 21 states that have similar laws. If the Supreme Court rules that Colorado's law infringes on free speech, the justices could send the case back to the lower court for further consideration, or it could declare the law unconstitutional and strike it down completely. Issues before the justices included whether or not the ban infringes on free speech or is a legal regulation of professional conduct, the types of techniques that can be used to change a person's sexual orientation or gender, and whether or not the therapist challenging the law, an evangelical Christian, is trying to change clients' sexual orientation. The court is taking up this case just a few months after upholding a Tennessee ban on certain types of gender transition care in youths. Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr. said the thorny questions that the case posed should be resolved by, quote, the people, their elected representatives, and the democratic process, end quote. Trump threatens to invoke the Insurrection Act, House Speaker Johnson refuses to debate, and the U.S. House delays swearing in a special election victor. With those stories and more, it's Zamon Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
If people were being killed and courts were holding us up, or governors or mayors were holding us up, sure, I'd do that. I mean, I want to make sure that people aren't killed. We have to make sure that our cities are safe.
President Donald Trump says he might use the Insurrection Act to send troops to American cities, as state leaders in Illinois and Oregon sue to stop deployments in Chicago and Portland. The governor of Illinois calls sending Texas National Guardsmen to Chicago an invasion, and along with the city, cites a, quote, threat of occupation in their suit. A federal judge has already blocked troops from going to Portland. Trump threatened to use the 200-year-old law during anti-ICE protests in Los Angeles this summer. Anti-ICE protesters in Chicago have clashed with federal agents during an immigration crackdown called Operation Midway Blitz. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson is refusing to debate House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries over the government shutdown. That's as Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the president is not telling the truth when he says negotiations on healthcare subsidies are underway. The Senate yesterday again rejected dueling stopgap funding bills. New Jersey Democratic Senator Andy Kim says Republicans are not even trying to stop the health insurance crisis coming for millions of Americans.
The Trump administration is not focused on lowering your costs. If they were, they'd be here at the Capitol today working to find a way to lower healthcare costs as we're about to see them spike for millions of Americans.
The shutdown is starting to impact air travelers. Airports in Denver and Newark have started to see delays from air traffic staffing shortages, with more likely. Democrats are slamming Johnson for refusing to swear in Congresswoman-elect Adelita Grijalva after her special election victory in Arizona. Winners of special elections are typically sworn in immediately, but Grijalva looks likely to be the deciding vote on a move to force the release of files on multimillionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. The Supreme Court is turning away an appeal from Epstein's longtime girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell. That means Maxwell's sex trafficking conviction stands. But the court is set to hear oral arguments today in a case challenging a Colorado ban on conversion therapy for minors. The plaintiff is a therapist who says the law violates her First Amendment rights to free speech and religious liberty because sessions only involve talk. Casey Pick, with the Trevor Project, says peer-reviewed research shows the bans in 24 states prevent harm to children and their families.
Youth who are subjected to conversion therapy are twice as likely to report a suicide attempt in the previous year, 2.5 times as likely to report multiple suicide attempts in the previous year. That is what is at stake in this case.
Proponents of conversion therapy claimed homosexuality is a choice resulting from an emotional disorder. The American Psychiatric Association condemns it as a violation of a therapist's oath to do no harm. The acting head of the CDC supports a call from Trump to break up an important childhood vaccine. In a significant change, the measles, mumps, and rubella shots could end up being given separately. I'm Zamon Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
The Trump administration could end medical testing on animals, typically a position desired by the political left. The Washington National Primate Research Center has 1,000 monkeys supporting University of Washington research, plus thousands of frogs, pigs, small mammals, and even cows, dogs, and fish. The center says studying its animals has given us significant information on COVID transmission and helped scientists develop life-changing technologies, including cochlear implants. And important drugs, including an HIV prevention medication, were tested on monkeys there before they went to human trials. The center says it only uses non-human primates for research when there is no other model that will work. Now, Donald Trump has closed an animal lab in West Virginia and canceled nearly $28 million in animal lab funding. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced there will be a dramatic reduction in animal testing at the Food and Drug Administration. Animal rights groups have specifically called for ending funding for the UW facility. Dr. Lisa Jones Engel, a primate scientist, stopped working at the UW's National Primate Research Center. She said, quote, "The sound that you hear in the lab, those are generally not good sounds. You hear the infants who have been pulled from their moms, who are just making the sound that says, 'I am terrified, I am afraid, where is my mother?' You hear the moms vocalizing, 'Where is my child?'" End quote. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, has made it a goal to close all 7 primate research centers in the U.S. Critics argue that with 21st century science, animal testing is no longer necessary. Computer models, 3D printed tissues, and artificial intelligence could theoretically eventually replace the need for animal testing. The National Institutes of Health under Trump has started moving in that direction, announcing its intention to fund and research other models and set up a center for standardizing lab-grown organs. The NIH's acting deputy director for strategic initiatives said she hopes that in 5 years, animal testing will be the alternative to these new models rather than the default. The state of Washington is threatening to disenfranchise voters who do not have what Republicans deem as a proper identification. Voting rights advocates are pushing back. Isabel Charlet has more.
Voting rights advocates are pushing back against an initiative to require voters to have enhanced driver's licenses or provide other proof of citizenship in order to vote in the state of Washington. Under the initiative, registered voters would be automatically unregistered in November of 2027 if they do not provide the required documents. Shoma Lahiri Gupta of the immigrant rights organization One America calls the initiative an attack on voting rights that would harm all Washingtonians.
Adding more and more requirements will create more and more hurdles to fulfill something that is designated as a right in the Constitution for all U.S. citizens. A right should not have hurdles. A right should be as easily accessible as possible.
State Republican Party Chair Jim Walsh filed the initiative in May. Washington Republicans say it is designed to implement a Trump executive order on election integrity, but that order has been blocked by courts and faces ongoing legal challenges. The current Washington voter registration form requires people to check a box confirming they are a citizen, but proponents of the initiative argue that is not enough. Cynthia Stewart with the League of Women Voters counters that the initiative is trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist.
There's no evidence that there are a lot of people who are not citizens who are registering to vote. It's a criminal penalty if they do lie about that.
Lahiri Gupta says Washington has been working to make elections more accessible through mail-in voting and same-day voter registration.
Washington needs to continue to be a leader, and this initiative sets us back decades.
The initiative needs about 309,000 signatures by January in order to advance. Lawmakers could then adopt the initiative as written or send it to voters in November of 2026. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with a low of 49 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will show some clouds with light winds. The high will be 64. Today in history, in 1868, Cornell University held its first opening day ceremonies with a student enrollment of 412. That was the highest number for any American university to date. The quote of the day is from Ezra Cornell, New York State Senator and founder or co-founder of Western Union and that university, who said, "I have always considered that choosing a companion for life was a very important affair and that my happiness or misery in this life depended on that choice." Russia launched drones, missiles, and guided aerial bombs across Ukraine, killing 5 people in a major attack that officials said targeted civilian infrastructure. Ukraine reported that 9 regions represented targets. 4 people, including a 15-year-old, died in a combined drone and missile strike on Lviv. It was the largest aerial assault in the city and surrounding regions since Russia's invasion on February 24, 2022. The strike left 2 districts of Lviv without power and disrupted public transportation for a few hours. In the southern city of Zaporizhia, an aerial assault killed a civilian woman and wounded 9 other people, including a 16-year-old girl. The strike destroyed residential buildings and left about 73,000 households without power. Russia's defense ministry said the strikes targeted Ukraine's military-industrial complex and energy facilities that supply it. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky reiterated his call for Kiev's Western partners to send additional air defenses to combat what he called Russia's aerial terror. He said, quote, "The Russians again targeted our infrastructure, everything that ensures people can live a normal life. We need more protection, a rapid implementation of all defense agreements, especially on air defense, to make this aerial terror pointless," end quote. Ukraine itself has targeted Moscow's oil infrastructure, contributing to persistent fuel shortages. The Kremlin has escalated attacks on Ukraine's power grid ahead of winter, as it did in previous years. Ukraine called that strategy an attempt to weaponize the weather by denying civilians heat, light, and running water. Moscow has also stepped up airstrikes on Ukraine's railway network, which is essential for military transport. Last week, Russian President Vladimir Putin again warned that any supplies of long-range weapons by the U.S. to Ukraine would badly hurt bilateral ties. Putin's remarks followed an apparent dramatic shift in Washington's Ukraine policy after Donald Trump said late last month that he believed Ukraine could win back all territory lost to Russia. California schools of higher learning might start giving preferential admission to descendants of slaves. Now, it's up to Governor Gavin Newsom. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
A bill awaiting Governor Gavin Newsom's signature this week would allow colleges and universities in California to give preference in admissions to descendants of slaves. Assembly Bill 7 permits but does not require colleges to give this preference. Brandon Green with the Western Center on Law and Poverty notes that the bill was inspired by the recommendations of the California Reparations Task Force.
As was well documented via the task force, California had an explicit role in perpetuating decades of harm on the descendants of chattel slaves, despite it being a free state. The consequences of that legacy of harm are clearly seen in the housing disparities, racialized wealth gaps, and systemic involvement in houselessness, to name a few.
California voters outlawed the use of race in college admissions almost 30 years ago with Proposition 209. The Trump administration has vowed to fight policies like this in court and through denial of federal funds. The bill intentionally does not use race as a criterion, since not all black Americans are descended from slaves, and not all slaves were black. Supporters note that a similar program in Nevada benefits descendants of tribal members. Green says the time has come to take concrete action to address the legacy of slavery.
At this moment in history, as our country barrels towards a reckoning not only with its past, but with the present ways in which nativism and white supremacy are further entrenching themselves in our day-to-day lives, it's vital that California pave the way for how truth, reconciliation, and repair can look.
The bill has already passed both houses in the state legislature. The governor has until Sunday to sign the bill, veto it, or allow it to take effect without a signature. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The U.S. Supreme Court seems relatively united in a decision to not reconsider a nonprofit's attempt to preserve sacred lands from a copper mining project east of Phoenix. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Supreme Court will not reconsider the nonprofit Apache Stronghold's effort to preserve sacred lands from a massive copper mining project east of Phoenix, Arizona. The justices Monday declined to revisit an earlier decision to throw out the case for a second and final time. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
Court records show conservative Neil Gorsuch stands alone in supporting the nonprofit's plea. Justice Clarence Thomas previously joined him in co-authoring a May dissent. recusing himself once more with Samuel Alito, who has disclosed stock holdings in BHP, the Australian-based minority partner behind Resolution Copper. In a statement, Resolution Copper told KJZZ it's pleased the court upheld a split Ninth Circuit ruling that Oak Flat is not subject to religious freedom protections. While on social media, Apache Stronghold says it's deeply disappointing that Mother Earth's voice goes unheard yet again. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Last week, the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians held a grand opening for its latest off-reservation housing development in Salem, Oregon. The site is a mixed-income living facility with 39 units. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports.
An honor song and ribbon cutting officially opened the Klosh Ilahi Haas Complex. About 60 people attended the ceremony, including tribal member Vera Vasquez. The working mother of three explored the 2- and 4-bedroom units, excited for the next day when she'd move in with her family from their much smaller home.
This is changing my life. We've been literally bursting at the seams in our 2-bedroom, so it's just going to be really nice to have space. And what I'm really looking forward to, though, is having the community and the garden and the tribal activities. Our kids can play and grow up together, and we can really connect as people.
Tribal officials say Native people in Oregon experience homelessness 4 times more than other demographics. And Salem has the 2nd highest population of Siletz citizens, next to the tribal headquarters and reservation area. Many left for cities and coastal industries after Congress terminated the tribe's federal status in 1954. Even after being reinstated in 1977, many Siletz people stayed in those areas. Tribal Chair Dee Pigsley says they're also looking at the city of Eugene.
They've all been really tough areas to provide housing because we don't own land there. We have to buy the land, and it's land that comes at a premium. And then we have to find money to build the homes.
The Klosh Ilahi Haas complex cost $17 million. Half of that was covered by an Indian Housing Block grant, while the tribe covered the rest. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Salem, Oregon.
The Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes in Oklahoma, in partnership with the U.S. Army, have begun the process of returning 16 children home from the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania. In a press release Monday, the tribe said it's a solemn and historic undertaking more than 2 years in the making. The disinterment began in September at the Carlisle Cemetery. The tribe say the month-long project represents a moment of healing and remembrance, carried out with descendant ceremonial leaders, tribal officials, forensic experts, and Army representatives. The children will be reinterred on tribal land in Concho, Oklahoma. 11 Cheyenne and 5 Arapaho children who passed away while attending the school are returning home. 13 were under the age of 18. The federal school opened in 1879. Native children were forced to assimilate and were trained in various trades. According to the tribes, the repatriation marks an important step toward justice and healing for the families and tribal nations impacted by the boarding school era. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
President Joe Biden promised to address inequities in community harm from pollution and climate change. Now Donald Trump wants to eliminate many of those programs. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Climate change and pollution harm some communities more than others. So Tony Reams, a professor at the University of Michigan, was glad when the Biden administration promised to address these inequities. He took a job at the Department of Energy and worked on the Justice 40 Initiative, an effort to direct more climate and clean energy investments towards these disadvantaged places.
We needed to ensure that communities that were feeling the climate crisis first and worst were also at the front of the line for the solutions. And again, these were communities that had pollution burdens, energy burdens, transportation burdens.
For example, areas with a lot of industrial pollution, which worsens kids' asthma, were prioritized for grants to help pay for clean electric school buses. And neighborhoods where many people struggle with high utility bills because their homes are old and drafty were prioritized for weatherization assistance and solar energy.
It's not just the energy transition for transition's sake, but it's really how do these decisions and technologies actually reduce costs for people.
Now the Trump administration has eliminated many of these programs, a setback for the work. But Reem says there are still opportunities to advocate at the local level for policies and programs that can help the communities who suffer most. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now we go to Global Citizen Commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. He says Donald Trump has turned national security into a justification for carrying out a war on American cities and citizens. Foreign policy has become domestic policy as U.S. troops and weapons are redirected to repression at home. One would think many in the military must surely be shocked by this suborning of the Constitution. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. During a large part of the post-World War II history of American foreign policy, national security meant international security. That is, defense of the U.S. homeland was believed to require a global military presence and regular interventions, political, military, economic, in the affairs of other countries. The threats changed over time from the Soviet Union to China to terrorism. But until Trump, presidents never claimed that these threats required giving internal order the highest defense priority. Their policies of liberal interventionism and their commitment to an imperial presidency were directed at defeating global menaces, even at the expense of real security at home. Now, under Donald Trump, we are at the start of another and far graver distortion of national security, waging the war from within, as Trump told the generals who assembled last week. But the enemy within isn't the same as in past decades: the Communist Party, organized crime, disease, or rampant inflation. It is the non-white migrant worker, the Marxists and radical left, the drug trafficker, the Democratic-run city, the woke universities, liberal civil society. In short, it is most of us. National security now requires widespread domestic repression. We have to handle it before it gets out of control, said Trump. He confirmed the shift to internal order when he said the National Guard would be sent to Chicago. We should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for military forces, he said. Have you seen video of the ICE helicopter assault on an apartment building in Chicago? U.S. cities are being treated like U.S. military bases abroad, launching pads for full-fledged attacks, but now on our citizens. Portland may be next. There are reports that besides the National Guard, Trump will order an elite military unit, the 82nd Airborne, to Portland, one that normally engages in special missions abroad. Governor Newsom in California says 300 National Guard troops from California are on their way to Portland. National security, once again, is the catchword to justify all manner of official acts that have no or very little bearing on the nation's security. Every tariff increase on furniture, foreign movies, aluminum, coffee, wine is a national security measure. Border reinforcement against increasingly few illegal migrants is to bolster national security. It's an invasion, remember. Dispatching regular military units to cities is justified on national security grounds. Pressuring law firms, universities, and social media companies to conform with the administration's policy on DEI and pay huge fees for compliance is necessary for national security. The Trump administration has learned from authoritarian regimes, as well as from previous administrations, that cloaking official acts in the language of national security is almost certain to get Supreme Court approval. That's already been demonstrated by the court's approval of freezes on foreign aid and termination of aid workers. Trump has largely turned his attention away from foreign policy. He has nothing to offer beyond tariffs and peace plans that support the aggressors in Russia and Israel, plans that offer no relief for the principal victims while giving a pass to leaders in Moscow and Tel Aviv who have been judged international criminals. Nor has Trump been able to bring China to heel. His tariff and foreign aid policies have been gifts to Beijing that have enabled it to extend its economic and political influence. What we are now witnessing is that foreign policy is domestic policy. The assaults on cities, the militarization of the southern border, and the attacks so far on presumed drug smugglers at sea, whom Trump labels unlawful combatants engaged in armed conflict with the U.S. These wartime conditions have enabled Trump to expand presidential power. Many senior military officers, including Trump's chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, are reported to be upset over his plan to use the military against Americans. As well they should be. The U.S. Armed Forces and National Guard should never be deployed to satisfy a president's personal political agenda. Trump's plan is patently illegal, a blatant violation of the Constitution and Trump's pledge to uphold it, and a suborning of democracy. It is frankly traitorous and should be denounced as such by military as well as political leaders. Surely some of our military leaders are mindful of what the militaries in other countries have done when faced with abuses of national security by corrupt, incompetent, and self-interested politicians. Unless opposed, Trump's national security policies can only end one way, in martial law imposed on our cities and in the mass detention of his critics. Who will rescue us from Trump's war on America? I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 7, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertow and Anna Wilcox. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Suzanne Potter, Simone Perez, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in depth. Holly Brown is one of the organizers of this past Saturday's rally against ICE